This is Bradcast producer Desi Doyen. We're off this week. Today's Bradcast was originally recorded on June 23rd, 2025.
Our president will start a war with Iran because he has absolutely no ability to negotiate. He's weak and he's ineffective.
Oh, hello, Donald Trump from 2011. Meet Donald Trump from 2025.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York, WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico, on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR. Hope you're drying out, Fairmont. Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR. Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet on the Progressive Voices channel. Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Delighted to have you here with us, even on, just a grim day, to be frank. But welcome to the Bradcast. As to that claim that we played at the top from 2011, that quote from Donald Trump lambasting the idea that then President Obama could ever strike a nuclear deal with Iran, and that he'd go to war with Iran instead of making a deal because he was such a weak negotiator. Well, unlike Trump, he didn't want you to forget it either in 2013. Trump didn't want you to forget that comment because, unlike Trump, Obama actually made a deal. But in 2013, Trump repeated it again. He wrote on Twitter on November 11, 2013, quote, "Remember that I predicted a long time ago that President Obama will attack Iran because of his inability to negotiate properly." Not skilled, Donald Trump said in 2013 about President Obama at the time. Well, funny thing about that, it looks like Donald Trump is now the president who attacked Iran because of his inability to negotiate properly. That after Trump in 2018 tore up the 2015 deal that was negotiated properly, after all, by President Obama, and it was working until at least Trump unilaterally reneged from it, pulling the U.S. out, resulting in what has now happened over the weekend. Donald Trump entered the U.S. into, yes, another foreign war. And so much for the notion that Donald Trump's bombing of three different nuclear sites in Iran over the weekend was a one and done thing. That appears to be slipping away quickly. Just as the myth, as we discussed last week on this program, that Donald Trump was ever any kind of anti-war president or anti-war candidate prior to that. As too many on both, frankly, the left and the right have been gullible enough to play along with. Worse, Many did so after Trump's term when, as we discussed a little bit on Wednesday's broadcast last week, despite his record, during his first term of escalating every single conflict in every theater of war that he inherited, repeatedly bringing the country to the brink of new wars, including, by the way, with Iran during his first term, unilaterally shredding decades-old international nuclear treaties with Russia, and, of course, the one that was struck in 2015 with Iran under Barack Obama, along with about six other countries, which successfully brought Iran's uranium enrichment program to a near-complete halt and placed it under 24/7, 365 oversight by the International Atomic Energy Commission. And, of course, he otherwise recklessly threw around U.S. power with no regard for the many lives that it would cost. But sure, he was the anti-war president. I mean, despite his aggression during his first term, and thanks in no small part to our terrible corporate media who allowed him to repeat that myth, and it was a myth over and over again. He was able to repeat the lie during his 2024 campaign over and over again at rally after rally.
When I'm back in the White House, we will expel the warmongers, the profiteers, and take over our government, and we will restore world peace. And we're going to end these endless wars. They never stop. You ever see these wars? They go on for 14 years, 20 years. We will measure our success not only by the battles we win, but also by the wars that we end, and perhaps most importantly, the wars we never get into.
So if that last comment sounded familiar at all to you, well, it's because it happened just 5 months ago. That was on Inauguration Day, his Inauguration Day speech, when he said we would not be getting into new wars. If you were gullible enough to believe that Trump was an anti-war president, that he really believed in an end to our forever wars, particularly in the Middle East, well, you may have been gullible enough to believe over the weekend that Trump's attack on three nuclear sites in Iran would be the end of direct U.S. involvement in Israel's new war on Iran. If so, if you were one of those folks, and again, it wasn't just the folks on the MAGA right who were dumb enough to fall for it. There were a lot of folks on the left who bought into that nonsense as well. Well, if that was you, it would seem that Iran and Donald Trump has made a fool of you yet again today. Iran launched an attack on Monday on a U.S. military base in Qatar, retaliating for the American bombing of its nuclear sites. The U.S. officials reported no casualties in that attack. Qatar condemned the attack on Al Udeid Air Base, but it said it successfully intercepted the short and medium-range ballistic missiles. Qatar's foreign ministry said the attack by Iran's Revolutionary Guards was a flagrant violation of Qatar's sovereignty, its airspace, and international law. Iran said the attack matched the number of bombs that were dropped by the U.S. on Iranian nuclear sites over the weekend and said that it targeted the base because it was outside of populated areas. Iraqis also said that they were informed by U.S. officials that missiles were launched toward the Ain al-Assad base housing U.S. troops in western Iraq, but apparently, the missiles never arrived, according to an Iraqi security official who spoke to the AP on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to speak to the press. Meanwhile, Israel's war on Iran also continues, with the Israeli military reportedly expanding its campaign on Monday, and Iran has expanded its missile attack on targets in Israel in kind, including the Israeli cities of Haifa and Tel Aviv, according to Iranian state television, with explosions also being heard in Jerusalem, as the Middle East and the world are now once again on tenterhooks in the wake of the U.S. upping the ante over the weekend. The retaliation against U.S. forces at an American airbase in Qatar on Monday comes just one day after an advisory from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security warning on Sunday of a, quote, heightened threat environment in the United States following Saturday's overnight U.S. military strikes on Iran's nuclear sites. The DHS issued Sunday's bulletin through its National Terrorism Advisory System and said the ongoing Iran conflict was causing a heightened threat environment. Low-level cyber attacks against U.S. networks by, quote, pro-Iranian hacktivists are likely, the bulletin said, adding cyber actors affiliated with Iran's government may conduct cyber attacks against U.S. networks. Quote, Iran, as DHS warns in their bulletin, also has a long-standing commitment to target U.S. government officials that it views as responsible for the death of an Iranian military commander killed in January of 2020. Well, that would be the top and much beloved in Iran, Qasem Soleimani, assassinated by anti-war President Donald Trump during his first term in office. Trump boasted yet again about that on Saturday during his remarks to the nation after the U.S. attack on the three nuclear sites in Iran. The DHS bulletin goes on to warn that the likelihood of violent extremists in the homeland independently mobilizing to violence in response to the conflict would likely increase if Iranian leadership issued a religious ruling calling for retaliatory violence against targets in the U.S. U.S. President Donald Trump said late on Saturday that he, quote, obliterated Iran's main nuclear sites with massive bunker buster bombs, joining Israel's assault against its Middle East rival, which began with Israel's attacks against Iran on June 13. More on those attacks by Trump and the familiar lies that are justifying them in a moment with my guest, a journalist from Rolling Stone. But The Hill reported on Monday afternoon that cyber attacks against U.S. networks are already underway. Hackers said to be aligned with Iran have now claimed responsibility for a cyber attack on Donald Trump's failing social media site, the one called Truth Social, ironically enough. That, according to the cyber nonprofit Center for Internet Security, or CIS, the Iran-aligned hacking group 313 team took credit for a distributed denial-of-service attack on Truth Social within hours of the U.S. strikes on several Iranian nuclear facilities on Saturday, according to a CIS spokesperson. Truth Social reportedly saw a surge in reports of problems on Saturday night, shortly after Trump posted on the site about the, quote, very successful attack on the nuclear sites at Fordo, Natanz, and Esfahan, according to Wired. It wasn't the first cyber attack that we've seen in response to this conflict, as an Israeli-linked hacking group took responsibility for cyber attacks against Iran's largest crypto exchange last week after its military assault on Iran had begun. The cyber attack reportedly transferred more than $90 million out of Novatek's cyber wallets, according to the blockchain analytic firm Elliptic. The Novatek's hack came one day after the group known as Gonshecki Durande, or Predatory Sparrow, also claimed responsibility for the hack of a state-owned Iranian bank. Trump entered Israel's war against Iran on Saturday, even though his own intelligence community repeatedly told him over and over again that Iran was nowhere near the development of a nuclear weapon, as his own National Intelligence Director, Tulsi Gabbard, told the Senate Intelligence Committee publicly under oath directly just weeks ago during her testimony in March.
The IC continues to assess that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon, and Supreme Leader Khamenei has not authorized the nuclear weapons program that he suspended in 2003.
Well, that sounds reassuring, doesn't it?
Funny that she said that and that it doesn't seem to matter.
Well, because Trump did not believe her, did not believe his own intelligence community. I guess he believed Benjamin Netanyahu's. When asked about Gabbard's remarks suggesting that Iran's nuclear program posed no danger to the U.S. after Prime Minister Netanyahu has been claiming now for some 30 years that Iran is just months, if not weeks, away from having a nuclear weapon. Netanyahu has been saying that for 30 years now. Oh, Iran is weeks away from a nuclear weapon. Well, when he was asked about all of that, Trump said he didn't care what his own national security director or his own intelligence community had to say about it. He knew better. He appeared to believe in what Netanyahu and other anti-Iran war hawks had been telling him. Whether it was true or not, didn't matter. Sounded good. The vibes were good. That's what he went with. We'll talk more about that in a moment with Andrew Perez. But if the attack on Iran's nuclear facilities was meant to end a nuclear weapon program that never actually existed, it might have done the opposite at this point, according to India's NDTV, which reported on Monday that Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, announced on Sunday that he would travel to Moscow for high-level talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin following overnight U.S. airstrikes on Iranian nuclear facilities. Speaking at a press conference on the sidelines of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation Summit in Istanbul, Araghchi said the consultations with President Putin was to take place on Monday morning after the U.S. attacks on nuclear Iran's nuclear sites, Washington has described as a, quote, necessary step to prevent Iran from acquiring nuclear weapons just 9 days into an Israeli-led aerial campaign targeting Iran's nuclear infrastructure. The Iranian foreign minister condemned the strikes as a gross violation of international law, adding that they had, quote, crossed a very big red line by attacking nuclear facilities. He warned that Tehran would invoke its right to self-defense under Article 51 of the UN Charter. In Moscow, Dmitry Medvedev, the former Russian president, the close Putin ally, and deputy chair of the Russian Security Council, accused Donald Trump of plunging the U.S. into a new war in the Middle East. Medvedev published his reaction on Telegram, stating bluntly, quote, Trump, who came in as a peacemaker president, has started a new war for the U.S. The former Russian president questioned the effectiveness of the U.S. operation. He said that it had failed to achieve any substantial military objectives, asking, quote, what have the Americans accomplished with their nightmare, well, with their nighttime strikes, but yes, nightmare strikes as well.
Yes.
Their nighttime strikes on three nuclear sites in Iran, asked Medvedev before asserting, quote, critical infrastructure, the nuclear fuel cycle appears to have been unaffected or sustained only minor damage. The enrichment of nuclear material, and now we can say it outright, the future production of nuclear weapons will continue, he said. Medvedev went on to assert that, quote, a number of countries are ready to directly supply Iran with their own nuclear warheads, though he stopped short of identifying which nations he was referring to. But sure, if we were trying to stop the nuclear program in Iran, it seems it's possible we may have accelerated it, with Russia now saying, hey, there's other folks who are happy to give Iran nuclear warheads. Medvedev further stated, quote, the U.S. is now entangled in a new conflict with prospects of a ground operation looming on the horizon. He also suggested that the attacks had politically strengthened Iran, noting, quote, Iran's political regime has survived and in all likelihood has come out even stronger. The people are rallying around the country's spiritual leadership, including those who were previously indifferent or opposed to it. And on that point, well, I can confirm it as far as this. My own barber happens to be from Iran, and she has long said that she dislikes the regime. She would like the regime to fall. I saw her, spoke with her over the weekend, and I said, hey, you were in favor of taking out the regime, right? You must be happy about this. You wanted the regime gone. She said, no, not like this. Not like this. She further went on to tell me how, you know, many people that she knows, she's got a lot of family still in Iran and back here, you know, are against the regime, or at least were against the regime, but now are rallying around the regime.
I mean, that's a completely predictable outcome, that it's very well understood in conflicts like this, that when one country attacks the other, it tends to make the people in the attacked country rally around the flag and support their political regime because they're fighting for their country.
Well, Desi Doyen, it's well known, it's predictable, at least if you're not Donald Trump, who either doesn't bother to talk to his own advisors about how war actually works or does not care what they have to say to him. Perhaps he's more interested in what Putin has to say to him or what Netanyahu has to say to him. Moreover, Iran's Aragachi dismissed any suggestion that Tehran will now rejoin diplomatic talks under current conditions, noting, quote, we were in the middle of diplomacy. We were in the middle of talks with the U.S. when Israelis blew it up, he said. He added that negotiations with European interlocutors were going on in Geneva just 2 days prior to the U.S. strikes, quote, and again, this time, Americans decided to blow it up, he said. So it was not Iran, but the U.S. who betrayed diplomacy. They betrayed negotiation. Iran's top diplomat asserted that the Trump administration has effectively disqualified itself from any future peace initiatives. We'll see if that holds up. Saying, quote, they have proved that they are not men of diplomacy and they only understand the language of threat and force. And this is very unfortunate, Arachi said. President Vladimir Putin, for his part, said after meeting in Moscow with the Iranian foreign minister on Monday morning that they had explored, quote, how we can get out of today's situation. Putin went on to call the Israeli and American attacks on Iran a, quote, absolutely unprovoked aggression. And, of course, if anyone knows anything about absolutely unprovoked aggression, it would be Vladimir Putin. But of course, since she's in the Trump administration, despite claiming otherwise to Congress just 2 weeks ago, Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, is now seemingly changing her tune about Iran's nuclear program just hours before Trump's attack on Iran. The DNI said on Saturday that Iran could produce nuclear weapons, quote, within weeks, despite testifying to Congress in late March that the country was not building them. Gabbard said that her March testimony that we just played for you a few minutes ago, in which she said in no uncertain terms that Iran was not building a nuclear weapon, had not been given the order to begin doing so, despite enriching uranium to higher levels than ever before following Trump reneging on the 2015 nuclear deal that was struck with the Obama administration, along, by the way, with Russia, China, France, Germany, and the U.K., that treaty had stopped all uranium enrichment that could ever be used someday in a bomb. Despite all of that, she said that those comments were taken out of context by, quote, dishonest media. Her change of position, the BBC notes, came after Trump said that she was wrong, quote, wrong, and that the intelligence showed Iran had, quote, a tremendous amount of material and could have a nuclear weapon, quote, within months, said Trump. You know, just as Bibi Netanyahu has been claiming over and over again for 30 years. But maybe, just maybe, maybe this time it was really true. Maybe us dishonest media took her remarks out of context somehow And, well, Bibi was right all along, and Iran really was just months, if not weeks, away from having a nuclear weapon, forcing the Trump administration to attack Iran's nuclear infrastructure without notifying, much less seeking approval from Congress, as mandated by the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law, by the way. But that's not what the evidence actually suggests. The evidence suggests that the Trump administration is, yes, sort of pulling a page from the George W. Bush administration by falsely claiming that strikes against the Middle Eastern nation were necessary to preemptively end their imminent use of weapons of mass destruction. Feels like I have been here before. But as in the George W. Bush administration's false pretext for the Iraq War, the evidence suggests again that there was no such weapon of mass destruction program in the first place that needed to be preemptively attacked. As the Rolling Stone's Andrew Perez and Aswan Subsang reported on Sunday, quote, there is no intel, unquote, to suggest that anything has changed regarding such a program since Trump's National Security National Intelligence Director told Congress that the intel community does not believe Iran had a nuclear weapons program. Let me take a quick break here. We will be joined by Andrew Perez to discuss his reporting at Rolling Stone and where this, I'm going to call it war against Iran, may go from here. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and The Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
Nothing at all is funny about it, and yet we seem to get farther and farther away from it each day of the Trump administration, the Trump era. Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Some breaking news during my past segment there. About 20 minutes ago, according to CNN, Iran issued an evacuation warning for a suburb of Tel Aviv, the suburb in the Ramat Gan suburb of Tel Aviv, warning them to evacuate. That, according to the semi-official Mehr news agency. That was 20 minutes ago as we go to air. And then just 5 minutes ago, make of this what you will, also from CNN, but some others are reporting it as well, U.S. President Donald Trump announced a ceasefire between Israel and Iran that he hopes will become permanent. Writing, quote, it has been fully agreed by and between Israel and Iran that there will be a complete and total ceasefire in approximately 6 hours from now when Israel and Iran have wound down and completed their in-progress final missions for 12 hours, at which point the war will be considered ended, he says, in all capital letters. This he wrote on social media, presumably his failing social media site called Truth Social. We shall see. As Andrew Perez, it would be good news if true. As Andrew Perez and Aswan Subsang reported at Rolling Stone on Sunday, however, while Trump recently publicly disputed Gabbard's testimony, according to two administration officials with knowledge of internal deliberations in recent weeks, the president's decision to strike three of Iran's main nuclear facilities was not driven by any new U.S. intelligence on Iran. It was just weeks ago that Tulsi Gabbard had said, no, Iran does not have a nuclear program. And yet, according to Perez and Subsang and Rolling Stone, one of the officials they spoke to said, there is no intel. Nothing new that I'm aware of. The president is protecting the U.S. and our interests, this source said, but the intelligence assessments have not changed from what they were before. Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, who sits on the Foreign Relations Committee, confirmed on Saturday night that American intelligence assessments on Iran have not changed as of Saturday night from when Tulsi Gabbard gave those remarks to the Senate Intelligence Committee just weeks ago. With Murphy noting on social media, quote, "I was briefed on the intelligence last week. Iran posed no imminent threat of attack to the United States. Iran was not close to building a deliverable nuclear weapon. But as I noted in the previous segment, of course, with Russia's or North Korea's help, as Russia is now hinting, maybe they will have a deliverable nuclear weapon soon enough, where they had not previously." Joining us now is Andrew Perez, senior politics editor at Rolling Stone, whose reporting was attacked by White House spokesperson Anna Kelly over the weekend as, quote, "false and lazy, designed to undermine President Trump's highly successful operation to dismantle Iran's nuclear capabilities." Andrew Perez, it has been many years, but welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you joining us. First, I want to give you a chance to a lot to talk about, but I want to give you a chance to respond to Anna Kelly's White House claim that I guess your reporting here, Andrew, is, quote, "false and lazy." Have they presented any actual evidence to suggest that your reporting is wrong in some fashion or another?
Not that I have seen. I did not find any of it particularly persuasive, the protests from the administration yesterday. You know, our reporting is what we've been hearing from the administration is that there has been no new intelligence to really justify any sort of immediate actions against Iran. You know, what we're hearing is that the White House is basically looking at the same intel it was several months ago when, you know, as you saw, Tulsi Gabbard, the director of national intelligence, went to Congress and literally in her opening statement said that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon. They continue to assess that Iran is not building a nuclear weapon, had not reauthorized its nuclear weapons program. You know, what I think the White House is trying to point to is effectively attempting to recast what Tulsi Gabbard said there, because elsewhere, you know, she said that basically they could build a nuclear weapon if they wanted to within, you know, relatively quickly. That, and so that is what they've sort of defaulted now to, you know, saying is their rationale for acting now.
So they're not building, although they don't say that, but they're not building a nuclear weapon, as Tulsi Gabbard said. But now the claim is, well, they could if they wanted to. They could at any time announce they're restarting their nuclear program, the one that was shut down thanks to Barack Obama's nuclear deal back in 2015. But they could restart that, and then they would be just weeks away from being able to create a bomb.
Yeah, that is the gist. Yeah, and we've definitely seen that, you know, in sort of from the administration. You know, they've also been pointing to this UN nuclear agency report saying virtually the same thing, which is that if Iran wanted to restart building a nuclear weapons program, it could relatively quickly. They did point to that yesterday. There was reporting in Axios to that effect after our story came out. But, you know, actually the chief, the director for the UN nuclear agency went on CNN yesterday and said that that his agency, the IEA, had no indication that that Iran was moving to craft nuclear weapons, just that they could if they wanted to. And to your point, this is, you know, this has been the longstanding claim, right? They could if they wanted to.
Right. For 30 years, they could if they wanted to, at least if you listen to Netanyahu. You quote the White House's Anna Kelly asserting, quote, "As the president and White House officials have said many, many times, U.S. intelligence showed Iran had all it needed to build a nuclear weapon," before going on to point to a statement earlier this month from U.S. Central Command Chief General Michael Carilla, who asserted that Iran's, quote, "current uranium stockpiles and the available centrifuges across the several enrichment plants are sufficient to produce its first 25 kilograms of weapons-grade materials in roughly 1 week and enough for up to 10 nuclear weapons." in 3 weeks, which sounds like sounds bad. So how do we square your reporting from several intel sources who say there was no new intel that changed anything from Gabbard's statement just weeks ago that Iran either didn't have the material or that the order to build a bomb had not come, with what the White House and apparently the chief of CENTCOM are now claiming? Can all of these claims be squared with each other? Because it kind of seems like, you know, we're sort of parsing the same false pretexts that we were handed by the George W. Bush administration back in the year-long lead up to that war. Now, in a few hours or days before this attack on Iran, is that what it feels like to you, or is there some sort of a legitimate premise for all of this if you really, really look to find it?
I mean, yeah, I think, you know, I think it is pretty easy to square what they're saying, because it's virtually indistinguishable from what Tulsi Gabbard said in Congress, you know, mm-hmm. just a few months ago. It's just a new frame on the same story, which is Iran is not building a nuclear weapon, but they could if they wanted to. That is effectively the claim. That was what she said then. Mm. In her opening statement to Congress, mm-hmm. and that's what the CENTCOM chief General Kurilla has been saying now, and you know, General Kurilla is definitely seen as one of the driving forces here, pushing the administration to launch preemptive attacks on Iran. Mm. But you know, I would say I was pretty young during the start of the Iraq War, but I think, you know, the difference, you know, then and now is that they really did, you know, take you know, a lot of effort to build this public drumbeat for war, and you know, and at a time when the you know, Americans were relatively hungry for war, mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of people were very skeptical of that case, and quite obviously for good reason, and that it was based on, you know, wholesale lies,
right?
Here they just kind of skipped that process and just said, "Let's do it,"
right. No, exactly. The lies, building the case instead of going taking a year, took about 24 to 48 hours to just tell the lies we need to go to get there and then get there. It feels very very familiar to those of us who weren't all that young back then. Does your reporting, Andrew Perez, get us any closer to understanding why Trump, who just weeks ago, if not days ago, was negotiating with Iran, offering them essentially a deal that was very much like we had already had in place with them as of 2015 under Obama, which Trump blew up in 2018? Does your reporting get us any closer to understanding why he moved so quickly from negotiations, you know, a negotiations footing to a military attack on Iran? Do you have any indication of what happened there? Why that switch got flipped so quickly?
Yeah. So as some of my colleagues reported last week, one of the major factors in the president's sort of different posture as it pertains to Iran was watching Fox News coverage the last couple weeks about looking at how looking at Israel's attacks on Iran and its sort of military sites and government officials and nuclear program, and seeing how the coverage was, you know, being or what the coverage looked like, and thinking it looked very cool, effectively.
Oh, man. During the it looked cool. Looked cool on Fox. Let's go to war. During a press conference on Sunday morning, you report Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth was asked whether the U.S. had new intelligence suggesting Iran had been attempting to build nuclear weapons, to which he responded, quote, "I would just simply say that the president's made it very clear he's looked at all of this, all of the intelligence, all the information, and came to the conclusion that the Iranian nuclear program is a threat." In other words, it sounds like both a no answer and a confirmation of your reporting that the White House seemed to be so angry about, calling it, you know, lazy. It seems to be a confirmation of your reporting that there is no such new evidence, that all of this was carried out simply on the vibes that the president was feeling as of Saturday afternoon when he gave the green light, perhaps after watching Fox News. Is that your read as well?
I mean, I would say the more telling interview was Secretary of State Marco Rubio's interview on Face the Nation yesterday when he was asked whether the U.S. had seen new intelligence showing that Iran's supreme leader had ordered the country to make nuclear weapons. Uh-huh. And he said, that's irrelevant. And he then doubled back to they have everything they need for a nuclear weapon. That really is the posture here. It's like it doesn't matter if they're building a nuclear weapon. They decided to act.
That seems like we're moving the goalposts pretty far away at this point, especially since, you know, at least in the case in Iraq, where they were lying about why we were going to war, they took a year to build that case, and they had gone to Congress and gotten essentially approval, authorization for both attacking Afghanistan and then Iraq. Nothing like that has even happened here. In fact, they didn't even inform the White House reportedly did not even inform Congress about their intent to attack, which seems to me to be highly unlawful. Not that the president anymore, thanks to the Supreme Court, has to follow the law, but highly unconstitutional as well. From your sources, are you seeing any reporting out there that there was any contact with Congress whatsoever in advance of this attack on Saturday?
I think I've seen that some of the Republican leaders had been informed, and that I believe the White House has said that they'd like attempted to reach out to Minority Leader Jeffries in the House, as well as Chuck Schumer. But, you know, the sort of like relevant committees, the Democrats on those relevant committees said they hadn't heard anything at all.
So it seems to me, Andrew Perez, that the big difference here of what we're looking at, other than, you know, compressing everything into about 24 hours, having no authorization from Congress at all, another big difference that we're looking at here is you have a president who has claimed that Iraq was a huge mistake, that he would never get us into another forever war like the one we saw in Iraq with boots on the ground in the Middle East. Do your sources in the military and the intel community agree that this was merely a limited strike, one and done? There's no real danger of, you know, that Trump knows better than to commit the U.S. to another such war in the Middle East. Do you get any sense of that from your intel community sources?
I mean, you know, in truth, what the president did this weekend like definitely constitutes several acts of war, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just unequivocally does. You know, we did see, it looked like Iran's response today, where they launched several missiles at U.S. air bases in Qatar and in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Those appear to have been, almost telegraphed. They seem to be relatively restrained responses, given the situation. So it is looking, you know, somewhat possible that this does not blow up into a wider conflict, but it totally still could.
Trump and his sycophantic Fox News weekend host turned Secretary of State Pete Hegseth have both claimed that the three nuclear facilities attacked by the U.S. on Saturday were, quote, totally obliterated. Andrew, that claim seems somewhat less than necessarily true. Have you been able to get any bead on that claim and how much, if any, of the facilities buried, you know, most deeply underground, in particular in Fordo, were actually destroyed, much less totally obliterated, as the administration is claiming? Is there any sense of that yet from the intel community or military community?
I think it's pretty unclear to this point.
Mm-hmm. And your thoughts, before I let you go, on the, I don't know if you heard at the top of the segment here, I noted that, Iran was warning a suburb in Tel Aviv to evacuate due to an incoming attack. And then 15 minutes later, Donald Trump announced that, quote, it's been fully agreed by and between Israel and Iran that there will be a complete and total ceasefire in approximately 6 hours from now. Then it says for 12 hours, and I'm not sure what that means. But he said at which point the war will be considered ended. Do you have any reporting on that, or was this another just sort of out of the blue announcement by Donald Trump?
I mean, I would say to this, big if true.
Yeah, right.
I think we will definitely see. I would say a half hour ago, it did not look like that. Perhaps something new has happened while we were getting ready to talk here. I wasn't sure if you were going to have to bump me. You know, who needs to talk about this now?
Yeah, I know. Well, Andrew, we are not in Kansas anymore, so things come and go pretty quickly around here, it seems. By the way, Andrew, you guys have been killing it this year at Rolling Stone. So thank you for your important work over there. Keep up that good work. Andrew Perez is the senior politics editor at Rolling Stone. He spent more than a decade reporting on money and influence, on politics and policy. Nothing to talk about there. He was previously a senior editor and reporter at The Lever, and prior to that, I believe at Searchlight, which is where we first spoke with Andrew Perez. You can find him on the Blue Skies at Andrew Perez, and of course his work at RollingStone.com. Andrew, really appreciate you joining us today, sir.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Keep up the good work. All right, let's take a quick break here. And we will come back with, do we have some time for a few calls on all of this?
Yeah, I think we can make that.
I'm not even sure what to make of all of this myself. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. I know we've got a lot of listeners to this show. Believe me, I hear from them on Twitter and via email who support Donald Trump. Many of those folks, not just folks on the right, but folks on the left who actually voted for Donald Trump under the premise that, oh, he was the peacemaker. He was not going to get us into any more forever wars in the Middle East or anywhere else. Well, how do you feel about that now? Do you feel betrayed? Do you feel lied to by Donald Trump? Or are you cool with all of this? Or are you old enough like me and Desi Doyen to remember similar lies about weapons of mass destruction taking us into a war that, in many respects, is still going on in the Middle East? 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. The Bradcast survives thanks to you and your support. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us continue to do over your public airwaves what we try to do 5 days a week. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Yeah, everything old does feel new again, don't it? 818-985-KPFK. Let's fit in a few calls here. Let me go to Fred in Chatsworth, California. Hey, Fred, welcome to The Bradcast, sir.
Yeah, hi. This is the first time I've listened to you, but I just want to let you know I voted for Donald Trump 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be sitting out the next election. I'm so disappointed. I feel stabbed in the back. Mm. I thought he was going to move away from the deep swamp, but he took a deep dive. He's into it even more than any other president. And I don't know. I just feel abandoned. I don't feel like it's my country anymore. The way he's been controlled, especially by the Israel lobby or the Jewish lobby or the Zionist lobby, whatever you want to call it. I mean, he does whatever they want, and it's ridiculous.
Now, Fred, were you a Republican prior to Donald Trump?
I don't know if I was a Republican. Yeah, you could say that. I mean, yeah. But the Republican has different factions, you know. I guess you could say I'm an old school Republican. I'm more like a paleocon, I'd say.
Okay.
You know, more like a Buchanan guy. I've become more and more appreciative of Buchanan. I thought he was a man born before his time. He was just born too soon. So, he was basically Donald Trump before Donald Trump became who he is.
So I'm wondering, Fred, you say you voted for Donald Trump three times. Did you not see, what is it now that has made you feel like, oh, that's it, I've had it, I was screwed, I was lied to? What is it that you saw this time that you did not see the last two times he ran for office?
Well, first of all, he does whatever, the foreign policy. I mean, before he had a little more restraint. Now he's just doing whatever Bibi Netanyahu wants.
Hmm.
And he's not reining him in at all. He's not, I mean, there's no mercy. There's no compassion. It's just like the brutality of what Israel is doing to Gaza. I mean, they talk about how they're not targeting civilians. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You've got to be kidding me. Have you seen pictures of Gaza?
Yeah.
I mean, they did a targeted strike to take out those Iranian generals.
Uh-huh.
You know, while they were that pseudo negotiation, it was just a farce.
Yeah.
But they took out targeted. They did targeted strikes, and you could see the apartments. You know, they were like the buildings. They just had one spot that was damaged.
Yeah.
But what they've done to Gaza is just like they've taken a steamroller over it. I mean, it's heartbreaking, and it's like it doesn't stop. It keeps. And then the other thing that really bothers me is how you can have Jews born in New York City and New Jersey and Los Angeles, they could just wake up one day and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to fly over to Israel because that land over there, that belongs to me. And then they'll hop on an LL flight. They'll go to Tel Aviv, and they'll grab some weapons from Ben-Gavir or who's the other guy? Smotrich.
Uh-huh.
And then they go to the West Bank or Judea, and they just mow over the Palestinians.
Mm.
I mean, how is that allowed? How can you be born in America? You don't have any genealogy that traces back 2,000 years to the tribe of Judah. And then you could just unequivocally say, hey, that land is mine. Get out of here. How is that possible?
Well, I want to say that's a different issue because that can be done.
Fine.
Well, that can
it's
be
not
done.
A
whether
the,
well, it is a different issue in that one is about war making. Another is about a Jewish homeland, you know, that goes back 75 years or thousands of years, depending on how you want to look at it. But I take your point that, you know, yes, that can be done, but we are, and this was true during the Biden administration in particular.
I know. We
also all in for supporting seemingly endless wars, at least when Israel is behind them, and not because they were attacked. They were, in fact, and it does need to be said, they were, in fact, brutally attacked. That helped kick off their war in Gaza, but the response has been...
Can I make a comment?
Yeah.
Can I make a comment on that October 7th?
Yep.
It took the IDF 10 hours to respond to that attack. Does anybody not question that? How is it possible in a country so small, in an area that has so much, so many eyes on it, I mean, so many sensors, cameras, so many satellites, so many drones. How is it possible that it takes 10 hours for the IDF to respond on an attack on a military outpost? They attacked a military outpost in Israel, in a kibbutz.
Well,
how is that possible? You tell me, please.
Well,
Tell me that one.
I can't tell you that one because I don't know that it took 10 hours. I'm going to have to take
your
word for
it.
I don't know that
it should be 15 minutes.
And I don't know the answer to that, Fred. I don't know if it was 15 minutes. I don't know if it was 10 hours. So I really can't.
No. I can't speak to that.
And I understand where
it should be 15 minutes. That's what I'm saying.
I hear you. And I understand where you're going. And I kind of also understand why you voted for Donald Trump. That said, I want to...
Well, what is that supposed to mean?
Well, because I think you. It sounds like you are inclined to believe certain things that you want to believe, and I don't know whether they are true or not. That's what I'm trying... I'm not trying to say that as an insult.
What if I said that's a lie?
I didn't say you lied. I said that.
I know, but you said that I'm inclined to believe things that I'm inclined to believe, whatever that means. But what if I said that's a lie?
Well, you talked about the Jewish lobby, that people can go here and start killing people in the West Bank, that there were you suggested there was 10 hours before the attack, and that means, I assume, that you're saying that this was some sort of a setup by Israel or Netanyahu, that they wanted to let that happen. Is that essentially what you were getting at there?
Oh, that was allowed to happen.
Okay.
That October
allowed to happen.
Was allowed
I understand.
To happen.
So that's
and
what
people
I
people know it.
That's
it will
what
never
I meant.
Come out.
That's what I meant. But I'm not trying to argue with you. What I'm trying to say, I'm actually trying to compliment you. I'm actually trying to say thank you for feeling a certain way that led you to vote for Donald Trump for 3 times in a row and having the courage to come out and say I was wrong. Whatever it is that convinced you, whatever it is that moved you that way, because there's a lot of folks who, you know, Donald Trump keeps changing the goalposts to what even things like America First means. They announced after attacking Iran that was America First, as opposed to what a lot of folks believed it to mean, which was no more forever wars. A lot of people voted him for him on that basis. So I just wanted to say thank you for being intellectually honest enough to say that I feel like he lied to me. And that's all I was getting at. I wasn't trying to attack you.
Okay, great. I'm glad you said that because I wasn't wrong. I was lied to. Okay, that's the issue.
Thanks, Fred.
I think I was duped. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay in touch. Love to hear from you more. I didn't mean to insult you. Thank you, man. 818. Oh, we don't have... we got time for one more here. Luis in Los Angeles. Hey, Luis. Welcome to the broadcast. Luis?
Hello?
There we go. Hey, Luis. Very quickly, I only got about 30 seconds.
Hello?
Yeah, Luis, you're on. Can you hear me?
I'm not Luis. My name is Bruce. Anyway, man, you know, listen, Fletcher Prouty... you know, in his book about JFK, you know, he goes into the U.S. going, getting involved in endless wars that become just wars for profit with no aim.
And you feel that's where we're headed again, do you?
Well, I don't know about the current situation, but it's been true of Vietnam. There's no objective, you know, war. Fletcher Prouty was the guy, if you remember, Oliver Stone's movie about JFK.
Yeah,
he was the Mr. X character.
I do. Thanks, Bruce. Sorry we mispronounced your name there. All right, we got to get out. Very interesting conversation. Sorry I couldn't get to the rest of you who are hanging on as well. We'll try again soon. My thanks today to our guest again, Andrew Perez of Rolling Stone, our producer, Desi Doyen, our board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is always greatly appreciated. It is an honor, even and especially in these dark times. Thank you for doing that. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other since the beginning of time, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to a support of listeners like you. And you can drop me an email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and especially Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here again, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.